Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It's been a while since I've done one of these, mainly because I think when I'm to the radio show or whatever, I end up talking about some gossip and stuff. But there was so much that was happening today and yesterday in gossip land that, and I did talk about some of it for the radio show, so you can listen to that tomorrow. But this is a more expanded than that. And also, I didn't get a chance to talk about Chris Noth. And the story that came out on The Hollywood Reporter, where they had a woman they're calling Zoe, who is now 40, and Lily, who is now 31, and that they were sexually assaulted by Chris Noth, Mr. Big. And they approached The Hollywood Reporter separately, months apart. They didn't know each other. They do not know each other. But they both said that, hey, the promotion, the press reports of HBO's, you know, Sex and the City series, the sequel, and Just Like That, and seeing Mr. Big again, said, oh, they just had to get it out. And if there's two, there's more than two. Let's be honest. And I did a reveal today. You know, I went through, and it's hard for me to find if there's any direct Chris Noth sexual assault ones, but I did reveal one from about 2014, which would have been the same time as Lily, roughly. And where it talks about Chris being married and that he was out with somebody who was in her 20s and he was introducing and showing her off. And then I asked, well, I wonder if she was raped too. Because so it shows that he definitely had an MO. And if you go back and you look at, you know, the Chris Noth blinds, they're all basically about him cheating on his wife. And he even, and in this article, he was questioned by Lily, aren't you married? And he goes, oh, marriage is for losers or something like that, or monogamy. And one of the things that came out today after that is something that I hadn't thought about in a while. And I think one of the reasons I hadn't thought about it in a while is because, well, first of all, it happened in 1995. And what Beverly Johnson, the first African-American on the cover of Vogue, she alleged in court filings, and she got a restraining order, but she said that Chris had beaten her, threatened to disfigure her, made death threats against her, was calling her 25 times a day, had vowed to kill Beverly's dog. So she gets the restraining order, and she hires a bodyguard. And she said, you know, I've never been so frightened in my life. And she couldn't believe that someone who had once been so tender and sweet could turn into this raging wild man. And then I think the reason I didn't think so much of it or put it out of my head is because Beverly alleged the same thing probably 2009-ish, I want to say, with another guy and said almost the exact same things. And the guy countersued and said, well, he was hired to be her boyfriend. And, you know, he wanted to be paid. So it kind of, I said, oh, well, that's the same thing she said about Chris. So I hadn't really thought about it in a while, but I'm glad that somebody put it out there today and reminded me. Now, The Hollywood Reporter reached out to Chris Noth, and he says, the accusations against me made by individuals I met years, even decades ago, are categorically false. These stories could have been from 30 years ago or 30 days ago. No always means no. That is a line I did not cross. The encounters were consensual. It's difficult not to question the timing of these stories coming out. I don't know for certain why they're surfacing now, but I do know this. I did not assault these women. I say you did. Their stories are remarkably similar. And just, and the callousness of him during the act and the way that they described it, very similar. And we already know from Betsy saying that he's violent. And then he wanted to control, I mean, not Betsy, Beverly. Betsy Johnson, another designer. Beverly Johnson. It was all about control. And she was living in terror. And then that Peloton ad, right? They had just come out and went viral, and then they just had to pull it in a second. And Mr. Big's got stuff he's working on. But he's not going to be working on it for much longer. He is done for a while. Just done. Nobody's going to hire him for a while. I say that, and then there's a bunch of rapists who are around. And then it looks like Harvey's going to get his criminal conviction thrown out in New York. At least he's still locked up in L.A. But if it does get thrown out in New York, he might get bail in Los Angeles. Then we'll have to see him around and stuff. And then also we had Ben Affleck. And I just got to talk about this. Because he went on Jimmy Kimmel. And he said it hurts his feelings that his confessional blaming his doomed marriage to Jennifer Garner for his alcoholism are being used to make him look like the worst, most insensitive, stupid, awful guy. That's because you are. I would like to remind you, Ben Affleck, that it was 3 years after you and Jennifer Garner split, and she's the one who drove you to rehab. So how is that her fault? How is it her fault that you were a raging alcoholic before you married her? How is it that you're a raging alcoholic now? How is it that you were coked up out of your mind on Howard Stern? How is that Jennifer Garner's fault? So where does he go? He goes to Jimmy Kimmel, his longtime buddy. He says, oh, you know, the interview with Howard was really cool. It was long form, in depth. It was a 2-hour interview. And we talked a lot about my family and divorce and alcoholism and how you have to be accountable and loving. And then he said, and of course, in that Howard Stern thing, that he'd started drinking because he was trapped with Garner. You started drinking? Are you out of your mind? And was it drinking that caused you to cheat on her all the time? You were drinking when you're hanging out with Ana de Armas at the beginning of the pandemic. Was that Jennifer Garner's fault too? And he tells Kimmel, you know, I was really happy with the Howard Stern interview. And I should do more honest, exploratory, self-evaluating interviews. And then he blamed all this on clickbait. And where he said he'd still likely be drinking if he hadn't left Garner. You were! Dude, it was 3 years. And she drove you to Popeyes or whatever before. She took you to rehab. Come on now. How are you going to blame her for that and your marriage? You were getting hammered when you were dating Jennifer Lopez the first time. You were hammered out of your mind when you took those strippers home in that Vancouver strip club. And Jennifer found out about it. And you blame that on drinking too. Affleck said, you know, it's said that I blamed my ex-wife for my alcoholism, that I was trapped in this marriage. And he said, that's not true. It is. That's exactly what you said. Now, if you were so coked out of your mind that you don't remember what you said, that's another thing. Maybe you should just say that. Well, you know, and it's, you don't even have to say you're coked out. Just say, you know, it was super early in the day. I didn't get much sleep. I had been out late, you know, the night before or whatever. And he goes, it's the exact opposite of who I am, what I believe, and I would never want my kids to ever say a bad word about their mom. Dude, again, and I never even say dude, but it's just ridiculous. And the fact that he had to go on Kimmel to do some kind of damage control. We already know you're a jerk. Look what your last movie about the duel and, you know, women being raped. You're misogynistic. Your best buddy's misogynistic. Very much so. You and Harvey were best buddies. And so it makes sense that you would throw Jennifer Garner under the bus for your inabilities to be a grown-up. Here's something that's really interesting. And whether or not you like Housewives or not, this is just something that pondered all day, that I thought about all day. In my mind. So Luann, Countess Luann, basically dined and dashed at a restaurant in Washington, D.C. after her Christmas cabaret show. And the tab was $500. And it was a Friday night. She went out and they ordered a seafood tower and a bunch of Grey Goose vodka. Then they stepped out for a cigarette break, but never came back. The witness, there's people there. And they saw it all happen. And they said, the witnesses said, oh, yeah, they said they were going to go smoke a cigarette. That's what they told their server. But they took all their stuff with them and they just left. I mean, and it wasn't like the restaurant was super crowded at this point. It was as it was ending. The night was ending. So, of course, the waiter didn't get a tip at that point for it. And this is Friday night. Well, the New Yorker finds out about it and reaches out to Luann's publicist and stuff. And Luann finally on Monday decides to pay the bill, said it was a misunderstanding, and then tipped 22%. In a situation like that, don't you think that possibly you should tip 30 or 40%? I mean, why not? This is when you're going to cheap out? And let's not forget that this is not the first time that she has dined and dashed. We know at least one other. So how many are there that we don't know about where she thinks, oh, I'm so famous or whatever, I'm just going to go ahead and walk out. They'll comp the bill. Now, what I was thinking about all day, besides it's obvious that she's drinking again, is that there were a lot of, not a ton, but everybody who picked up the story, you know, the gossip tabloids, everybody like that picks it up, writes about it. But there was one that didn't. I didn't see it, and if you guys find it or something, let me know, put it in the comments. But I didn't see that the New York Post covered it. She's a Real Housewife of New York. Isn't that what they would like to do? Isn't that something that you would just automatically assume that they would cover? The New Yorker covered it. Believe that the Daily News covered it. Can't remember. But the New York Post didn't. And it got me to thinking that perhaps Luann is one of their sources on the Housewives. And they don't want to get in her bad graces by reporting on it. Others have reported on it. We don't need to report on it. Because we would still like you to keep feeding us what's happening on the set. If there ever is a Housewives in New York set again. I just got that feeling. Because it's so odd to not write about it. I could understand if it's a Beverly Hills housewife or whatever, not writing about it, but it's a Real Housewife of New York and you're a gossip page. Isn't that something that you would normally 100% of the time write about? But they didn't. So it just got me thinking that perhaps they omitted it all. Speaking of the New Yorker, Jeremy Strong, that whole profile and his method acting tendencies, where, you know, he said the thing about his character, I take him as seriously as I take my own life. I get it. The guy's a method actor. We're giving him a hard time about being a method actor. I mean, his heroes are like Daniel Day-Lewis, who, I mean, come on. He had to quit because of his method acting. Dustin Hoffman, method acting. Al Pacino, eh, okay. But also Daniel Day-Lewis, Dustin Hoffman, not very fun to work with. And then you have Jessica Chastain, who came to his defense. And then Aaron Sorkin doesn't have social media, so. But one of the things that Jessica said was the profile that came out on him, talking about Jeremy Strong, was incredibly one-sided. Don't believe everything you read, folks. Snark sells, but maybe it's time we move beyond it. This is the same Jessica Chastain who did the whole Oscar Isaac thing, right? To get clicks, to get likes, to get people talking about her. And she did it earlier this week. And I don't think anybody really paid attention to it because it wasn't the whole touching of the arm, caressing kind of thing. But it was the day of the Golden Globe nominations, and she's holding hands with Oscar Isaac and said, I convinced him to start a TikTok. We got nominated for a Golden Globe. We're so excited about that and all this kind of stuff. And she is wearing like a loose top and she's trying to cover it or whatever, but she knows because she's filming it and everything. And she is becoming very clicky also. So when she says this one particular quote that she gives about Jeremy Strong, I'm going, you know, pot calling kettle black at this point. But I think everybody is worried that Jeremy's going to get burned out like Daniel Day did. And I get that, but this is just his way of acting. And I think we've made a very big deal about it. Let him do what he wants to do. If he wants to go all method, let him go all method. Just don't turn into Shia LaBeouf, who's another method guy. Right? Just don't turn into that. A lot of you might not know who Ken Cragen is. He passed away, I think on Tuesday. I'll tell you what. I mean, he was the guy who made We Are the World. He made it happen. 100%. And he... It's amazing how he managed to do that. He graduated from Harvard Business School and then just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to get into this whole film and television and music. And he didn't just pigeonhole himself into one thing. So he created a management company with his business partner, Ken Fritz, back in the 60s. And they worked together as a co-executive producers, like the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. And then Glenn Campbell had a TV show, which was also on CBS. And then he signed Kenny Rogers, which was huge for him. And then they, you know, produced Hair at the Aquarius Theater in Hollywood. They wrote a book, Hey, How to Produce a Successful College Concert. And he was just instrumental in organizing the talent behind We Are the World. Because he managed Kenny Rogers, Lionel Richie, the Bee Gees, Olivia Newton-John, Burt Reynolds, the Smothers Brothers, Trisha Yearwood. And he was also big on philanthropy. He was a humanitarian. He also contributed to Hands Across America, NetAid. He got the United Nations Peace Medal. And he was on a bunch of charity boards, like the Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, Community and School, USA for Africa. And then because with all these clients and everything that he had, when they would go do movies, he would become the producer on their films or their television projects. His daughter wrote a children's book, and he turned that into a movie, The 12 Dogs of Christmas. He got a bunch of Emmy nominations. He got MTV Awards, an American Music Award, Manager of the Year. And one of the things that he was working on last year was something called Hands Around the World. And it was essentially for climate change, to combat climate change. And, you know, it was a pretty big deal, and he was working on it with the Slumdog Millionaire composer and songwriter. And it was just, it was really interesting to see that even in his 80s that he was still doing that. And then he still had could still get people to come in. And one of the things that he said about the We Are the World was, that he didn't have to go begging people to join or make 100 calls like you normally would do. Because he said that everybody you call, no matter who, even A-plus list stars, their very first question is, who do you have? And he said, I've done a lot of these things and rarely will that one person jump out first. But the reason We Are the World worked so well is that at that time, half of the top 10 records in 18 months were his clients, and he had Michael Jackson and he had Lionel Richie. So they go, oh, okay. Because normally whoever you're asking, they want to hear the song, but they didn't have the song because it didn't finish until the day before they recorded it. So RIP. Oh, Tristan Thompson lost in court. He lost as he knew he would. But he was trying. So a judge ruled to dismiss his paternity lawsuit in Texas. He really, really, really wanted it to be in Texas. You had Tristan Thompson testify. You had Marilee Nichols testify. And Marilee Nichols filed a paternity lawsuit against Tristan in California in June. But then Thompson goes, I'm going to try and put it in Texas because I think that she owns some property there. So I'm going to put it in Texas. But basically, the judges said, well, you know, you guys, I don't know if the conception happened in Texas. It could have been anywhere. You guys had a lengthy relationship across multiple states. The child was born in California. The mother lives in California. Tristan lives in California. So why the heck would this lawsuit be in Texas? Well, I'll tell you why Tristan wanted it, and this is what he had said to Miss Nichols. My feelings haven't changed at all. I won't be involved at all. By the way, if you think having this baby is going to make you some money, it's completely wrong. You're aware that I'm retiring after this season. So in terms of support, it will be whatever's required monthly for someone who's unemployed. It's Texas, so it'll only be a couple $100s. So you're better off taking the $75,000 I'm offering, because you won't get nothing near that with having a kid with a father who's unemployed, which he spelled wrong. All you'll have is a baby with a father who has zero involvement with the child and a few $100s of child support each month. Oh, but Khloe Kardashian loves him. This is a horrible human being. And it just shows what his end game was. You have the baby and you get a couple $100 and I'm never going to see him. What kind of human being is that? Somebody that Khloe Kardashian really loves. And in October, Merrill Lee's legal team claimed that during Thompson's deposition, he refused to answer basic questions about jurisdictional issues between California and Texas. He plays in Sacramento, which is in California. And he said, okay, yes, we had a relationship. Because at first he denied that they even had a relationship. And then he basically shames her and says that she sleeps around with everybody. He goes, we did not have a serious ongoing relationship. We saw each other sporadically between December 2020 and March 13th, 2021. She told me that she'd been involved with other athletes and understood the limitations of our relationship, to wit, that we might see each other on a sporadic basis for consensual sex only. So he's essentially admitting, yeah, Khloe, I cheated on her all the time. And I was cheating on her with, you know, and then there's probably other people too. Now, all of you know that I don't like the Duggars. I don't, but I do like one. I like Jana. I always have. Because she tried to live her own life, and look what it got her. She has to babysit 47,000 kids, and she's the one who gets in trouble because she's the only one watching the 47,000 kids. And, you know, child endangerment. But this is what happened. This is what she said, and I 100% believe her. She goes, I was babysitting a few months ago when one of the children wandered outside alone. A passerby who saw the child called the police. This resulted in a written citation as well as a follow-up of child welfare, who concluded that it was an accident and the child was unharmed. They recognized it was a case of the child slipping out of the house when you turn your back for a moment. It all happened so quickly and was scary. Now, Jana doesn't have any kids, but she is the forced babysitter for every single one of the other kids that her parents had that need to be babysat, plus many of the ones that her sisters and brothers have. She wasn't arrested. She's got a citation. Give her some help. You know, she wanted to live her own life. And what they did was, they didn't want her to live her own life. So what they did was they gave her the burden of watching all these kids, so that way she couldn't live her own life. That she couldn't see who she wanted to see in the way that she wanted to see them. Even the sisters get, I bet you were exhausted, stressed, and just emotionally worn out. Watching all those kids is hard. And they even admitted that she was the only one there. Because they just used her for that. Now, another person who is probably not canceled, but is not going to be hired for any television shows or movies probably in the foreseeable future, but can still probably do stand-up, is Jeff Garlin. And he was fired today from the Goldbergs. And we could kind of see it coming, because he tried to save his job when he gave an interview to Maureen Ryan with Vanity Fair earlier this month. But it just didn't work. It's a mutual agreement, so I guess technically he wasn't fired, but come on, he was fired. Because his exit's effective immediately. He was supposed to have one more day of shooting left from the original 18-episode order, but they're just going to CGI in his face and stuff like that. I mean, if you think about the show, everybody seems to get along really well. And everybody does. And they said that everything's great, fantastic on the show. And then Jeff Garland comes and it turns into a living nightmare. And then he was verbally and emotionally abusive. But Garland said, no. I'm not verbally offensive. I'm just being silly. And then he said, yeah, I do like saying the word vagina. And according to a source on the show, a camera assistant made a complaint to her department head about Garland's use of the word. And apparently after he found out, he put his hands around her and kept saying vagina in her face over and over again. And he had a bunch of go-to jokes that people found offensive, talking about grandma's vagina, balls, brassiere, and that he wouldn't address female crew members by name. He would call them nicknames that people found offensive. And the there was another interview, and it talks about Garland and two stand-ins on the show. It's a married couple, and everybody, I guess, loves this married couple. And the married couple complained because of the way that Garland treated them. And Garland said, no, it's a joke. And one of the times that this female stand-in, it's like I said, this married couple, he screamed at her and he said, why are you always in my way? Get the F out of my way. She was walking down a ramp on the set. They had done some blocking for a scene and she was confused and she looks around. And then Garland turns to the woman's husband saying, tell your wife to get the F out of my way. And everybody was appalled. And that was more HR complaints and that was it. He would intimidate the woman. He'd embarrass her husband. It was just this abuse of power. And HR kind of gave him a chance, said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to reduce the number of times that you're on the set, reduce the number of episodes that you're in, and hopefully you can learn from this and everything will be great. But no, he didn't change his behavior at all. And then he mocked HR and all the guidelines. So that was it for him. Why would you do that? I don't understand some people. You were a comedian who was fairly popular. You get on this great show, I think with 9 seasons or something like that, and probably can get a tenth. It's getting to the point where you can probably start asking for $500,000 an episode, maybe $1 million an episode. And you want to be a jerk about it? And just, I don't get it. It's his power. And one other thing I want to talk about, that is the baby bar that Kim Kardashian passed. And I want to say first and foremost, congratulations on passing it. I think that's great. She failed it 4 times, I believe. And much like the regular bar, I think it's only offered every 6 months. And the baby bar is not something that I ever had to take. It's something that you take if you're doing a correspondence course, a distance learning course, studying with a judge, going to an unaccredited law school in California, and you have to take it. And you have to pass it to continue your legal studies. You're not actually a lawyer when you pass it. It's just to allow you to keep studying, to keep going. So you have this 2-year break, essentially, while she's trying to pass it. Congratulations on passing it. Like I said, I mean it 100%. No snark, no sarcasm. I'm glad. The thing that I have the problem with is that she said that she likes to repeat this. Oh, this one's harder than the actual bar. And no, it's not. And the statement doesn't make a lot of sense. But what she and her publicist and everybody likes to throw out there is that it must be harder because the pass rate, I believe when she last failed it in November 2020, the pass rate was 29%. Okay, that's pretty low. And the October bar exam in 2020 had a pass rate of 73%. Now, granted, California lowered the cut score for both the bar and the baby bar. So more people passed it than ever before. But she's saying that, oh, since only 29% of the people pass it, it must be harder because 73% of the people passed the bar exam. Yeah, if you just look at that number. But think about it like this. Okay. Kim Kardashian is now allowed to continue her legal studies and then take the regular bar exam. everybody else who's in her position, who passes the baby bar, is allowed to take the bar exam. So 100% of the people who pass the baby bar can take the regular bar. So you would think then, okay, well then, if this number that you're saying is correct, then everybody who passes the baby bar, since it's harder, it must be 100% pass rate for the baby bar, because remember, you said it's harder than the regular bar. But that's not true at all. So the first time pass rate in, I think it was October 2020, and remember, they made it higher. The first time pass rate for people who had passed the baby bar, so these people who go to unaccredited schools, things like that, was 37.9%. Let's just round it up to 38. So 38% passed it. Even though 100% of the test takers had already passed the baby bar, only 38% passed the regular bar. So how on earth could it be harder? The baby bar. And now how did ABA accredited law school graduates? They passed at a rate of about 83%. So, you know, math doesn't have to be your strong suit if you want to be a lawyer. But just to throw that number out there, and then people don't go dig into it. You'll see People Magazine or us or whoever, TMZ, when they go, oh, this is harder than the real bar because the pass rate's only 29% and the real bar is 80% or 73%. So it must be harder. So Kim is smarter than everybody. But you got to look at the numbers. It makes no sense. You're comparing apples to oranges. So I just wanted to have that clarified. All right, you guys. I will talk to you later.